S. Truman, President of the United States, dedicate this day, Sunday, to America, armed and free.
If you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
And we have with us one of the guardians of Iraq, armed and free, General George Hormis Sada, graduated from Iraq's Air Academy in 1959 and was trained by elite forces in Great Britain, Russia, and the U.S. An ace fighter pilot who trained other pilots, he went on to become Air Vice Marshal in Saddam Hussein's military. His acts of bravery, including saving the lives of 40 downed coalition pilots in the Gulf War, have earned him hero status. Now retired, General Sada is director of the Iraqi Institute for Peace and also serves as a spokesman for the newly elected Prime Minister of Iraq, a recipient of the prestigious International Prize for Peace and Reconciliation presented by the Bishop of Coventry, England. General Sada is also the president of the National Presbyterian Church in Baghdad and chairman of the Assembly of Evangelical Presbyterian Churches in Iraq. It is a joy, a privilege, and an honor to welcome to the microphones of America, Armed and Free, General George S. Sada. Welcome, sir.
Hello, thank you very much. God bless you.
And you as well. I imagine that's not an easy role to play, being an Assyrian Christian growing up in Iraq.
Iraq is actually Mesopotamia, and the Assyrians were the indigenous people of Mesopotamia. We are the indigenous people of the country, and we remain till now there. We are about 1,200,000 Assyrians.
Mm-hmm. Out of a population of about 26 million? 27 million people, yeah. All right. Without shooting the entire wad of this interview in the first question, did your position in the Iraqi Air Force allow you to know what weapons the country had?
Oh, of course. I was in a position that I know in details everything.
What weapons, in terms of chemical, biological, and nuclear, what weapons, General Sada, did Iraq have first before the Gulf War and then between the Gulf War, between Gulf Wars, between 1991 and 2003? What weapons did Iraq have?
Well, we had conventional weapons and weapons of mass destruction. We had chemical, biological, and we had a project of nuclear weapon. But that project was destroyed by Israeli F-16s in 1981.
Mm-hmm. At the reactor? At
the reactor, yes.
Right. What was the name of that complex again? It was called the...
Ozerak.
Yes. It had been something else, but then they changed the name of it?
Yes. It was Ozerak. We call it July, 17 July, according to the revolution of the Ba'ath Party.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a French project. Given to Iraq. I mean, Iraq bought it from France.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the meeting that you participated in with Saddam Hussein, where he wanted to attack, I believe he actually even ordered an attack of Israel with chemical weapons and, I believe, 98 fighters?
Yes, this was actually a plan. He said that the Americans are not going to attack us, but if they will attack, the first rocket of American will touch our Iraqi soil. I want 98 airplane. To fly equipped with chemical weapons and to attack Israeli cities within two waves, one wave through Jordan and the other wave through Syria, without telling Syrians and Jordanians.
That's interesting. He thought he could get away. He thought that the fighters would actually get through both Syrian and Jordanian airspace?
Yes. He was thinking like this. You know, because, I will call this mission a suicide mission because he was thinking as soon as they will approach the Syrian borders, there's a very little distance that they will get to Israel, and the same thing Jordan. So with that little distance, that both air defenses of the both two countries cannot do anything.
Could the Iraqi fighters at the time, with the fuel on board and at the speed they would have had to travel, reached Israel from Iraq without refueling in the air?
No, there was a plan of refueling them in the air, but yes, with the plan that it was prepared for the 98 airplanes, all these 90 airplanes could go and penetrate and reach the Israeli city.
What chemical weapons were they ordered to use to attack Israel?
Well, we had two kinds of chemical weapons. We had sarin gas and mustard gas.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be both of them.
And that was the plan, to send 98 fighters with sarin and mustard gas into Israel?
Yes.
What would Israel's reaction have been if they had been hit with chemical weapons?
Well, you see, this was the debate. When as soon as he said this, I raised my hand. And he said, again, George? I said, yes, sir, I beg you, I want to say something. So he said, what is it? I said, the Israelis have got a plan to destroy any airplane coming from the east. Therefore, this means that these airplanes will be destroyed over Syria and over Jordan. And in another meeting, the chemical weapons will be dropped over these two countries. And this is not fair. And then, of course, no matter what the Israeli air defenses are strong, but still from 98 airplane, some can penetrate to Israel and attack the Israeli cities. And that's also not fair. I told them the Israelis are going to have the right to retaliate with their nuclear warheads that they have. And they have more than 200 nuclear warheads. Therefore, our country will be destroyed. They will destroy our cities also. And then he found that this is a very important subject, and he started asking questions. I answered all his questions, and the questions took me for 1 hour, 41 minutes to answer them all.
How many people, what usually happened to people who told Saddam Hussein the truth?
Well, actually, it is very difficult to tell him the truth.
Especially now, but...
Many times people have been killed. But when you put it in a frame that when you are telling him the truth, the harm is going to be on him and on his family and on his regime, then he will think it twice. You know, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why you should be very careful and very clever of how to put something to Saddam when you think he don't like it, but it is truth.
I guess there's an art to that, because a lot of people certainly suffered terribly from attempting to give him any opposition to exactly what he wanted. You go on in your book, Saddam's Secrets, How an Iraqi General Defied and Survived Saddam Hussein, to talk about his megalomania, and in only an hour on the radio, there's no way to describe what you put in, the words you put in the book about how evil this guy truly was. But let's talk in general about the Ba'athist Party for just a moment.
Yes.
What was the political leaning of the Ba'athist Party? What was it based upon?
You see, let me tell you. They say that the body of the nation is Arab, and the spirit of the nation is Islam. Therefore, all Arab-Islam should be united. United either by peacefully, I mean people will agree to unite, or that the party will unite them by force. And that's what Saddam wanted to do. And that is what happened to Kuwait. He took Kuwait by force, a small country, Arab country, Sunni, Muslim country, but he took it. And he will always explain it that he is unifying the Arab country, because he has the ideas to be the emperor of the all Arab country.
Mm-hmm.
Because he have, as soon as you enter the imperial palace in Baghdad, you will find on the right, there is a big picture done on the stones. Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon is handing over the keys of the world to Saddam Hussein. And Saddam Hussein is receiving them, and the artists have done the two pictures as they are twins. They look each to other. They are alike, except their clothes. The Nebuchadnezzar, of course, with the Babylonian clothes, and Saddam Hussein with the Iraqi military clothes.
Did the painting show Saddam handing Nebuchadnezzar a check?
Yeah, he was receiving the keys of the world from.
So this
is his thinking. Not only Arab country, but he thinks like that, you see. This was Saddam. He was amazing how he thinks. Therefore, to work with him, it was so difficult.
You call him an evil genius.
He was evil genius. You are right.
Well, I'm only repeating what I read in your book. By the way, folks,
he was always genius and evil thing.
Folks, if you would like to get a true insight, listeners, if you'd like to get a true insight into what went on for many, many years inside of Iraq, I can't recommend this too highly. It's called Saddam's Secrets, How an Iraqi General Defied and Survived Saddam Hussein. And it's not just one guy beating his chest, because Georges won't tell you, but he's a humble guy. He doesn't, you think, well, there's a guy that was a fighter pilot and a general. How can that be a humble guy? But if you read the book, you'll see that it actually can happen. What was your function, and what is your function, in reconstituting the Iraqi military today since liberation?
Well, you see, after liberation, I was nominated to participate in forming the new Iraqi army. Because, I know all the generals, I know all the high-ranking officers. So we were trying, you cannot make a general in 2 days, 3 days. You must take it from the old army, because a general needs 25 to 30 years to be a good general. Therefore, I helped very much to bring the good old generals from the Iraqi army and those good officers whom we can build a new Iraqi army with them. And then I also participated in forming the new defense ministry. And I was the spokesman of the Ministry of Defense in year 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, in 1st of June 2004, when the first Iraqi government was nominated, I was the spokesman of the Iraqi government, spokesman to the Prime Minister, Dr. Ayad Alawi.
Mm-hmm. Since then, you've turned that function over to other people, right?
Yes. And then, of course, I continued like that, and then I worked in the National Security Council. I was the head advisor to that council. And now I am the president of the International Institute for Reconciliation and Peace. Before, this institute was Iraqi Institute for Peace. But now we made it International Institute for Peace, and we are... Our office is in Oklahoma, in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm. So do you come to the United States? Or do you spend most of your time in the United States now?
Yeah, well, I am very much invited in universities and Christian centers, in churches and organizations, in many places. So I have got a lot of time I am here. I go and come to Iraq 4, 5, 6 times a year.
Mm-hmm. Is it easy to get back, based on your credential, is it easy to get back and forth between Iraq and the United States for you? I mean, travel is not a problem?
Oh, no. Actually, it is, it's easy to go and come, but I must take a lot of care of security when I am there.
I would certainly imagine that to be the case. Stand by. We're up on that first break of the hour, and we will be with you in just a little bit, and we will be back with General Sada here on America Armed and Free on AM 690 KVOI Tucson, AM 930 KAPR Douglas, and AM 1240 KJAA Globe.
History.
Goldwater Institute Chairman Tom Patterson asks, the Constitution established what form of government? What was President Reagan referring to when he said,
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall?
These questions were part of a 60-question test of civic literacy administered to college freshmen and seniors at 50 American colleges and universities, covering American history, government, international relations, and economics. Freshmen scored 50.4%, while seniors improved to only 54.2%. 8 of the 50 colleges were left to explain how 4 years at their institution could actually diminish students' knowledge base, including elite schools such as Princeton, Duke, and Cornell. Our identity, which binds us together, are the ideals of limited government, economic freedom, and the rule of law. These ideals have produced unprecedented prosperity and liberty. Our only option to insist that our colleges produce civic literates. For more information, goldwaterinstitute.org.
Frontier Guns and Antiques, 3156 East Grant Road since 1971, has brought you the finest in antique, collectible, and just plain shootable irons, smoke wagons, repeaters, and even a trapdoor or two. They won't order new guns for you, only old ones. Since experience is the best teacher, Jim and Margie Shera specialize in experienced firearms. Share their experience at 3156 East Grant, where they're always buying your used guns. 325-9880. That's 325-9880.
Can the private sector protect people from identity theft? LifeLock CEO Todd Davis joins Charles Heller at noon Sunday, March 2nd on Liberty Watch. At 12:30, does the FDA fail to regulate us enough? George Landreth of Frontiers of Freedom. At 1 p.m., can a World War II veteran's last battle be to clean up a battlefield he invaded in 1943? Leon Cooper returns to America armed and free, fresh from Tarawa. Liberty Watch and America Armed and Free. Sundays, noon to 2, right after Swap Shop. Imagine that this is your daughter.
What do you want?
Now you get to decide how this scene ends. Or...
Stop, Earl!
Some misinformed people want to take away your daughter's choice between rape and self-defense. We're pro-choice on self-defense. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership... JPFO.org.
You're listening to America Armed and Free. You can talk to Charles Heller live by calling
And welcome back to America Armed and Free. It is not very often that I play the anthem of another nation on the radio, but I thought in this special circumstance where we're interviewing General Georges Hormis Sada, who is an Iraqi, a retired Iraqi general and involved in the peace movement there, I thought it might be appropriate. That get you going, General Sada?
Oh, yeah. I'm still with you. Yes, I heard it. But by the way, this has changed now.
Oh, that's not the current anthem?
Yes, this was Saddam's one. It's changed now.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I thought I was doing you a favor. I guess I was bringing...
Oh, thank you very much. Still, it's okay. We will always think it was belonging to a nation.
Oh, well, I
but
guess I need to get the new
changed.
One.
After liberation, this anthem was changed.
Okay, well, I guess I have egg on my face a little bit, but I tried hard. Luis, you're live on America Armed and Free with General Georges Sada. Your comment or question briefly for him.
Hello, gentlemen. My question for the general is this. If we would have went there with three times the number of people that we went there and finished our business and let our friends there and get out, wouldn't it be better than the way we do it?
Okay, great question. Take your answer on the air, if you would, Luis,
yeah,
General Sada.
Charles, I don't hear the questions very
clearly. Oh, that's
clear.
Okay. I'll repeat it for you.
Yeah.
What Luis had said was, if we had gone there in 2003 with three times the amount of people that we did, wouldn't it have been a better way to go about liberating Iraq?
Yes, I agree with him 100%. The forces which were sent to Iraq at the beginning were little forces.
Mm-hmm.
They, yes, can fight the Saddam forces, and they can win the battle as a war, but they cannot win the peace, because after winning the war, we need always win the peace, and especially after disbanding the Iraqi army and the army which was protecting the borders of Iraq, the American forces would win the battle and came to Iraq to liberate it. They were not enough to keep the peace in the country. A great vacuum happened in the country, and a lot of looters, because Saddam Hussein have managed to release about more than 170,000 criminals from the prisons, and these are the people who nobody could have control on them, and the borders were opened. Everybody was entering from east and west, and especially the terrorists and the Islamic extremists, they all entered, and now Iraq became a chaos. Many prisoners were released, and then people entered from east and west, and after they organized themselves, they start fighting the Iraqi young military and the Americans.
You mentioned that you made an offer at the very first, right after the statue fell at Fardis Square, you made an offer to an American general that you could take 40,000 members of the Air Force and you could subdue Baghdad with you in charge of it, but they turned you down. And you said that that was a mistake, that they should have left the forces in place, only taken out the corrupt Ba'athist party members, and then left the army in place with the structures in place, and they would have gladly fought on loyally. Do you still believe that?
That's true, and that was supposed to be, and disbanding the army would not serve the American forces.
Mm-hmm. Tom.
That army doesn't belong to Saddam. Yes, there were many generals, many people who were faithful to Saddam, and there were many who were joined the Ba'ath Party, most of them, but I am sure after the toppling of the regime, the right thing was to change some 15, 16, 20 generals from the top of the military, and then those who are dangerous and very close to the party also release them. We could, from the Iraqi army, make more than 300,000 who would go and make the peace in the country. Mm-hmm. And this have happened before. Many revolutions have happened in the country and dramatic changes happened, but nobody have touched the army. But it was given always the task and the duty to make the peace in the country.
Now, you very briefly, because we have calls piling up here, but you never joined the Ba'athist Party ever, did you?
Never in my life. Mm-hmm. I never joined any political party in my life.
Because you're a soldier.
Yes, because I believe that the army should be without political party.
Okay, back to the phones. Tom, a brief question for General Georges Saga.
A brief with hopefully a follow-up.
Okay, I'll give you one follow-up.
Baker warned Terry Aziz if chemical weapons were used during Gulf War I, severe retaliatory action would be taken, hinting we would nuke. Was a similar threat made on Gulf War II?
For you.
Yeah, I am not hearing the questions.
That's okay. I'll repeat it for you.
Yes.
What Tom asked was, during Gulf War I, Secretary Baker made it very, very plain to Tariq Aziz that if chemical weapons were used, we would take severe measures in retaliation.
Okay.
Was there a similar warning given during the 2003 liberation of Iraq?
No, actually, I didn't hear anything about similar thing in the 203, but you see what the Americans did. They attacked all air bases, and wherever they thought that there were weapons of mass destruction piles, they destroyed everything. They didn't give the chance to Saddam Hussein to do what he was planning to do.
Okay, Tom, follow.
Most of those things were destroyed.
The quick follow-up, Charles, is try to find out to what extent Saddam tried to mask the fact he tried to assassinate George Sr. That was his downfall because George Jr. had an X on his head after that happened. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. To what extent was there, to the best of your knowledge, General Sada, was there a plan by Saddam to assassinate George Bush Sr.?
I don't know details of this, but I am sure that Saddam Hussein used to hate him. He put his picture on the floor of Rashid Hotel,
mm-hmm.
and he used to hate him. He would do anything to do it, but I don't know any details.
Okay, and Teresa, you're live on America Armed and Free with General Georges Saada, a retired Iraqi general and head of, I'm sorry, the name of the organization again, General Saada, that you head now.
Sorry, say again.
The name of the organization again that it's called the Iraqi Institute. No, it's called the International Institute.
International Institute for Peace.
Peace. Teresa, your question for General Saada.
I have two questions. I'll ask him. I thank you for taking my call. I'll ask him. I'll take my answers.
Okay.
Off the air. I just wondered if the general ever had to deal with Saddam's two lovely sons and what it was like.
He sure did. He's got some great stories
and
about
also,
that.
My second question is, Whatever happened to the guy called Baghdad Bob who gave the nutty press conferences where
okay.
he would stand there and say there are no forces?
Okay. Great questions, General Saddam.
I had the question.
Okay.
Well, the two sons of Saddam Hussein, they were more criminal than their father.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of experience with them. You know what I did? I went to both of them and I gave them, each one of them, a Bible. I said, this is the word of God. I want to present it to you. They took it. Both of them. Of course, I gave one to the father. And I have got lots of experience of with both of them, and especially the youngest one, Qusay. He wanted to kill all the prisoners of war on 24th of January, 1991.
You had a big argument with him over that,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, and I had a long, long argument. It's a long story. I have mentioned it in my book. But thank God, at last, I was put in the prison, and they were in the other side of the prison, but both of us were released after the war finished.
Yes. You had you told him that that his father, Saddam Hussein, had put you in charge,
yes.
And that actually what ended the argument was that you were in charge and you would be violating, they would be violating his order if they were executed. Isn't that what you told Qusay?
Yes. No, not only that. I told him, if you see, I said, I am put here by your father, by the president. Please listen to me. I have got experience and I'm a big general. Listen to my advice. But he didn't. But I told him, I know when you make personal things on them, to make the story personal, they will be afraid. I told him, if you are going to kill these pilots, I am sure America is going to declare another war, but this time it will be a war between America and your family. So this is what made him afraid to do it.
That's finally what stopped him. Who is Colonel Mohammed Mubarak Sultan Mubarak, and how did you stop his execution?
Mohammed Mubarak Sultan Mubarak, he's a pilot from Kuwait. And I always thought about him. He was very brave. Because when Saddam invaded Kuwait on 2nd of August, the airfields that they have were destroyed by the Iraqi Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
So he managed to take off, not on the runway, but on a road on the airport.
He taxied off the airport and took off from the road.
Yes, with a Skyhawk. And he attacked the Iraqi forces entering Kuwait. And after he finished an attack, he landed in Al-Zahran in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, when the airstrike happened on Iraq, he also participated. And he was shut down by the Iraqi air defenses, and he became a prisoner of war. And you just imagine this man falling in the hands of Qusay. He wanted to make him pieces, but I defended him, and I said he is a prisoner of war, and he was defending his country. He said, don't tell me his country. Kuwait is Iraq. I said, yes, that is what you think, but Kuwait, for me, as a man responsible for prisoners of war, this man have got a different ID. He have got different weapon than what we have, and he have got different uniform. And these three things make him not to be an Iraqi. Therefore, he's prisoner of war, like Americans, like Italians, like anybody.
What happened to the other 605 Kuwaitis who were in Iraqi custody in 1991?
We had 606 Kuwaitis in custody. One of them was with me as a pilot, and the others were with the other, you know, in Mukhabarat and intelligence. All of them were killed.
Except
but
for the
this
one...
This guy who was with me, he was saved, and he is now a big officer in Kuwait, and he became actually the consultant and the advisor to the to Abu Zayd when he was the commander of the Central Forces of America.
General Sada, stand by with us for a moment. We're up on our bottom of the hour break.
Can the private sector protect people from identity theft? LifeLock CEO Todd Davis joins Charles Heller at noon Sunday, March 2nd on Liberty Watch. At 12:30, does the FDA fail to regulate us enough? George Landreth of Frontiers of Freedom. At 1 p.m., can a World War II veteran's last battle be to clean up a battlefield he invaded in 1943? Leon Cooper returns to America Armed and Free, fresh from Tarawa. Liberty Watch and America Armed and Free. Sundays, noon to 2, right after Swap Shop.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
جديدة وأنا في دنيا جديدة صبر القلب ما يفيدة دمعي عالحق يصوف انتي عني بعيدة وأنا في دنيا جديدة صبر القلب ما يفيدة دمعي عالحق يصوف والحب يا ليلى.
Welcome back to America Armed and Free, where we have the joy, the pleasure, and the honor of having retired Iraqi Air Force General Georges Saada with us. He now works in the peace movement for the International Institute for Peace and serves as a spokesman. Well, he did serve for a while as a spokesman for the Prime Minister of Iraq. He's a recipient of the prestigious International Prize for Peace and Reconciliation presented by the Bishop of Coventry, England. He's also president of the National Presbyterian Church in Baghdad and chairman of the Assembly of Evangelical Presbyterian Churches in Iraq. And General Saada, you're going to be speaking here in the Phoenix area on March the 7th and 8th?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, if folks would like to have more information, they can call the front desk here of the radio station during the week at 790-2440 and get information about listening. There's a church where General Saada is going to be speaking in Phoenix.
Actually, it's a seminary.
It's a seminary.
Yes.
Okay. And there's going to be also a banquet involved in that. If folks would like information on attending it, you can. And the number for that is 520-790-2440. Call the radio station during the week and get the details of it. I apologize. I should have had that in front of me and don't at the moment, but oops. So, going back to your book, Saddam's Secrets, How an Iraqi General Defied and Survived Saddam Hussein, what's it like to be inside a bunker that's hit by an American cruise missile?
Oh, well, I was actually, this was on 17th of January 1991,
mm-hmm.
and after I have told them to withdraw the forces from Kuwait because that's the only solution. But, of course, nobody listened. And they told me, if you will say that again, your head will be separated from your body.
Hmm.
I said, anyhow, I'm an advisor. I want to advise. Anyhow, I will make the long story short. It was 17 of January 1991, 1 o'clock and 30 in the morning. We were waiting for Saddam to come because he is the supreme commander of the armed forces. But he didn't appear, so the Air Force commander told me to sleep in the apartment of the Saddam Hussein. There is one apartment in the operational room. All the others are rooms for the officers. I said, no, you are the one who should sleep there. You are the Air Force commander. He said, George, you are my commander. You are my instructor. You gave me solo. You sleep in the apartment of the president. I slept there. It was 1:30. I thought I would sleep about, 8 hours, 10 hours, because I didn't sleep these last three nights we were waiting for war.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 2:30, I woke up. I looked my watch. It's 2:30. I said, "Oh my God, what makes me to wake up at this time?" So I left the room, going to the electronic room to see what's happening. And here is the attack. The earth starts shaking. It was like earthquake. It was very, very tough attack. You see, the operation room is very big one underground, and the ceilings and the walls of the operation room is 3 meters, 50 centimeters, very strong, all reinforced concrete.
Mm-hmm.
But the bunker, the operation room didn't collapse completely. But, lights and everything went off, and it was very, very tough attack.
Mm-hmm. How accurate were the cruise missiles that hit the quarters that you had been occupying only seconds before the attack at the Iraqi Air Force headquarters?
Let me explain it to you. When I left the apartment after the attack, I looked. I saw the water is going below the door of the apartment. I knew something had happened in the place that I was sleeping. I went back and opened the door by force. What I find? I find a huge concrete block from the ceiling of the room on the bed that I was sleeping at, which Saddam was going to sleep.
Hmm.
And the bed was flattened out on the ground because the concrete block from the ceiling, it was very huge.
So the actual room in which you'd been staying had sustained a direct hit from an American cruise missile?
That's true. Direct hit on the bedroom of Saddam Hussein.
Oh, boy. That was pretty close.
But you see, Saddam was not there. It was me, myself. This poor man was there.
Yep.
But I have got somebody to help me. It was Jesus Christ. He is the one who woke me up and said, "Leave this place, George. It's not for you."
Hmm. not your tongue. What stopped Saddam Hussein's chemical weapons attack on Israel? What was it that stopped him from...
He was... what stopped him?
Yeah.
I think what stopped him, that all airfields were destroyed. The runways were destroyed. And even some of the chemical weapons and the Balad Air Force, which now it is the American Air Force out there, were destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So
In 1991. Because he had
of them, you know,
he had fully planned to send 98 Iraqi fighters with chemical weapons into Israel. But the fact that we pulverized Iraq's capacity to do it is actually what physically stopped the attack against Israel.
That is true. That is true.
Folks,
he couldn't do it.
Folks, if you just tuned in and you wonder what's going on here, we have the joy and the pleasure and honor of speaking with former Iraqi General Georges Saada, who was the second in command of the Iraqi Air Force, rose through the ranks from 1959, was trained both in Russia and also in England, and also in Texas, in Lakeland, Texas?
Randolph Air Force Base.
At Randolph Air Force Base.
In San Antonio.
So he's a fighter pilot that's capable in fighters of several different places. Also have the information on where General Saada will be speaking Saturday, March 8th, 2008, the Westin Kierland Resort, 6902 East Greenway Parkway in Scottsdale, and you can find out the information at phoenixseminary.edu. That's phoenixseminary.edu. When you have a good professor, you get good when you have a good producer, you get good information. Mark, you're live on America Armed and Free with General Georges Saada. Your comment or question?
Yes, what a great honor, and what a powerful show you have today, Charles. Also, and my question is, what happened and what will become of the remaining Chaldeans and Christians and Jews, if there are any left, in non-Islamics, basically, in a future Iraq?
Great, and this is a wonderful person to ask about that. Are you going to have a follow-up question?
Possibly.
Okay, stand by. General Saada, what will become of the Chaldeans, the Catholics, and of other non-Muslim faiths in Iraq?
Well, let me tell you. In Iraq, the Christians are mainly Chaldeans, which are Catholic, Syriac, which are Orthodox, and the Assyrians, which are the ancient church of the East. Of course, we are the smallest evangelical denomination in the country. These Christians, to be very, very frank, they are the biggest losers of what happened after liberation in 2003. That's myself and my people. Why? Because we are very peaceful people, and we don't have any militias. We live in order, and we need the order and the peace in the country. And this was lost for a long time in Iraq until last year in 2007. The peace started again becoming better, and the Christians start again breathing well. But let me tell you, we have lost more than 27 churches were destroyed by the Islamic extremists. We have lost our properties. The Christians have been harmed very much. Their children have been kidnapped, and ransoms have been taken from the Christians too many times. I have the full details of what have happened to our people.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God, again now, the security start becoming better, and the people start, most of them, they fled. About 615,000 Christians fled the country, either inside the country to other places or to Syria, Jordan, to the surrounding countries.
Okay, stand by. Mark, very fast follow-up.
Yes, and then the future of American, potential of American bases in and around Iraq, hopefully the four compass points and giant ones in the center, to remain there in Iraq. Is that a possibility?
Take your answer on the air, Mark. General Saada, will there be American bases in Iraq?
Well, I believe that now after the peace will be achieved in the country, I believe that it is very important for some of the forces of America, air, naval, and ground forces, to maintain in the area, to keep the peace in the place, and then to control and to protect the interests of Americans and Iraqis and the interest of the world, and especially to keep the peace of the Gulf.
AM 6, stand by with us for just a little bit. We're up on that next break. AM 690 KVOI Tucson, AM 930 KAPR Douglas, AM 1240 KJAA Globe. Last break of this program.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
And welcome back to America Armed and Free, where we have the joy, the pleasure, and the honor of having with us retired Iraqi General Georges Saada. He is now the director of the International Institute for Peace that works with in Iraq as to find solutions between various religious organizations and other factions. He will be speaking Saturday, March 8, 2008, at the Westin Kierland Resort, 6902 East Greenway in Scottsdale. If you want information on it, you can look at phoenixseminary.edu. Again, phoenixseminary.edu. We have a brief call from Scott, and then I want to talk about weapons of mass destruction. Scott, your quick question for General Georges Saada.
Yes, sir. It's an honor, sir, and thank you. I was just wondering about the 40 coalition soldiers that you helped, and I'll take it off the air. Over and out.
Okay. General Saada, tell us about what you did to preserve the lives of 40 coalition pilots who were prisoners of war in Iraq during the Gulf War in 1991.
Well, that was on 24th of January 1991, when the youngest son of Saddam Hussein, his name is Qusay, he was responsible for the armed forces. He came with five military armed people from the Special Republican Guard to the operation room and asked for me. I came to him. He said, where are the criminals of the war? I said, what do you mean? He said, the American pilots. I said, sorry, Mr. Qusay, these are not criminals of war, but they are prisoners of war, and I am responsible for them from the president, and this is the book which I am dealing with them. I was carrying in my hand the book of Geneva Convention. He said, don't show me that book. That book is for prisoners of war, and these are not prisoners of war, and they should be executed now. And you know, here it was the time, a tough discussion between me and him. I talked to him a long story, but he was not listening. And at last I said, my God, what I should tell this, this criminal who want to do this big crime. So I told him, I said, look, Mr. Qusay, the moment you are going to touch these people and kill them, I am sure America is going to declare another war, but this time it will be a war between America and your family.
Yeah, not a war of nations. Okay. What was the state of chemical and biological weapons development in Iraq in 2003?
You see, the weapons after 1991, some were destroyed, and some were even destroyed by Saddam to show them to the United Nations, but he made an organization to hide the weapons and continue developing them. So these weapons were hidden up to year 2002 in summer, and they were after that, before the American came, they were transported to Syria by air and ground.
How were they transported to Syria?
You see, in summer, a flood happened in Zeyzoun area, that's in Syria. A dam was collapsed, and the Syrians asked for humanitarian aid from the Arab countries. And this time, it was the time that that Saddam Hussein, genius, evil thinking, start thinking how to deal with his weapons. And he announced to the world that Iraq is going to support Syria with humanitarian aid by air and ground. And he converted the only two airplanes that we have civilian regular passenger in the country were given permission to fly from Baghdad to Damascus for humanitarian aid. He converted them to cargo airplanes, and they were used every day two or three sorties to fly from Baghdad to Damascus and carrying the weapons of mass destruction. And then 100 semi-trucks on the ground also took the weapons from to the western city of Deir ez-Zor and from there to Syria, unloaded them there, and they came back.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So the weapons were transported by air and by ground before the Americans came, and when the forces came, they didn't find them. But I tell you one news. In year 2006, the American Army still managed to find 505 rockets with mustard gas, and they are now in Washington. And the American experts found that the chemical weapons of Saddam Hussein can last for 12 years.
Hmm. So they were still potent. They were still usable.
Yes, they were still usable.
Hmm. Now, were chemical weapons, in your direct experience as a general in the Iraqi Air Force, what did the term mean when a mission was given, special weapons with the phrase, special mission with special weapons?
Yes.
What did that phrase mean, and was the command ever carried out?
You see, we have got ops orders from the operational and the director of operation in the air headquarters to give orders to the squadrons to fly with many types of the weapons. Conventional weapons, we mention their names exactly in detail. But when Saddam want to attack a place with the chemical weapons, he don't mention chemical weapons, but he will say just like this. At the beginning of the ops order, he will say special mission with special ammunition. So this means the base commander will understand that this is the chemical that he have it there, and the others will not understand it.
And were missions like that, to the best of your knowledge and experience directly, were those missions carried out in Iraq using those weapons?
Yes.
How many
we
times?
We have attacked the city of Halabja in Kurdistan with one of these missions, and in one attack, 5,372 Kurdish innocent people were killed. Mostly they were women and children.
And of course,
these weapons also were used against the Iranians in the war with Iran from 82-88. Of course, late 88, they were used when the Iranians used to penetrate our last defense lines in our territories.
To the best of your knowledge, at the end of the Gulf War in 1991, how much material like that type of munition that was used to attack both the Iranians and also the attacks in against the Kurds, how much of that material was left over at the end of the Gulf War?
Well, you see, I will tell it to you and you will know. Two airplanes to make 56 sorties, and one of them like Jumbo, and the other one 27. This means
so a 747 and a 727.
And 727. Sometimes the Jumbo used to make two sorties a day.
Mm-hmm.
56 sorties.
So
that is a huge amount of... and then 100 semi-trucks. Each truck take about 30 tons. So you just imagine how many tanks 100 can take.
So what you're saying is 56 plane loads of a 747 and a 727. It took that much cargo capacity to carry,
yes,
Saddam's weapons of mass destruction that were left over after the Gulf War out of Iraq.
And of course, some was made from 91 up to 2002. Also, he continued making them. So this was the amount that was left. But still, 505 rockets were found.
Were found inside of Iraq by the coalition forces.
And God knows how much is buried under the rivers and how much is buried in special bunkers that nobody has found it till now.
There were some pictures on the internet of some MiGs that were found that had been dug up in the desert.
Yeah.
And they had been equipped with, of all things on a fighter aircraft, chemical spraying gear. To the best of your knowledge, are you familiar with those particular aircraft?
Well, I am familiar with the order that Saddam gave. After he knew that the Air Force cannot fly, he said it is better to bury these airplanes in the in the desert and the places, because if you put them in the shelters, they were also destroyed, and the Americans have many shelters have been destroyed with mm-hmm. all airplanes and the technicians inside. So
right.
They found that the best way is to bury them.
We're only down to a minute now. Tell us about the Institute for Peace and the work that you do now.
Well, now, you see, we are trying always to do our best to make the people meet. We were more active when it was an Iraqi Institute of Peace, but now we are just new. This International Institute for Peace is just new, and we are going and coming to Iraq to try to do something that the peace will continue.
So, in other words, you're attempting to get the different religious groups to meet?
Yes, we are meeting with the different religious, and we are I have got very great relationships with some Sunnis and some Shia that we can always, talk and make dialogue. It is not easy job, but we are trying to make these people, instead of using weapons, to use dialogue.
Is it possible that Islamic extremists can ever be converted to the cause of peace?
Well, we have got many conversions for those who were terrorists, and now they are believers, and these are Kurds. They are in Kurdistan.
So it is possible.
I think always it is possible after they feel that and understand that they are doing a mistake.
General Sada, it is a joy, an honor, and a privilege to have you on this program. I hope someday that you will do it again and come back and report to us on some of the successes that you've had. I've never said this to anyone who's ever fought a war against us, but thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you, Charles. God bless you. We must serve the peace of the world. The Prince of Peace is Jesus Christ, and I am a follower of Jesus, and I am very proud of that.
God bless you.
Thank you, sir. God bless you.
Have a great day, General Sada.
Same to you.
I want to encourage each and every... You know what? If he can be vigorous and not violent, if he can be vigilant and not vituperative, so can you. In Liberty, I'm Charles Heller.
Great God, our King.
AM 1240 KJAA Globe.